Hello and welcome to episode 4 of 48 Hour Heroes Origin Stories. Today I'm talking with Dino Moore, the city producer for the Atlanta 48 Hour Film Project. I really wanted to talk to Dino in advance of Filmapalooza this year because we met under interesting circumstances. After COVID shut the world down, a group of my fellow city producers, every Sunday for a couple of months, we'd have a Zoom meeting where we would just talk about, you know, whatever was on our minds, and we'd share 48 ideas, laugh about stories we'd accumulated over the years. And Dino started, you know, popping up into the meetings, and we all instantly, you know, fell in love with him. Even though we hadn't met him in person, he was instantly part of the family, and he had a lot of questions about the 48 in terms of running a city, but he had participated in the 48 a bunch of times leading up to his taking over as a city producer of Atlanta. And he was a volunteer at the Atlanta Filmapalooza in 2016. So after a couple of months of, you know, chatting with him in our Zoom meetings, you know, just chatting back and forth via text, I thought it was, you know, kind of funny. I felt that I knew him better than I actually did. I felt like I'd known him in person as a friend, you know, for several years. And even though it had only been, you know, a dozen hours or so via Zoom and text messages. So I really wanted to talk to him in advance of Filmapalooza to get, you know, to his origin story, to get a little deeper into who he is and, you know, become a better friend through the process and, you know, just generally geek out about the 48. So please welcome Dino Moore, city producer for the Atlanta 48 Hour Film Project.
So it really doesn't matter what you look like, say or do. I know that I had a cooler weekend than you.
Welcome, everyone. I'm Kirk, your host for 48 Hour Heroes Origin Story. And today I'm talking with Dino Moore, who is my city producer counterpart in Atlanta, Georgia. So I'd like to welcome Dino. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
So, you know, I met you in an interesting way in that I hadn't really known you, you know, physically in person prior to COVID. And then almost 2 years ago, we started doing those weekend Zoom meetings and you showed up and you were, you know, a new city producer for the 48 and just kind of, you know, immediately slid into the family.
Yeah.
That's what I loved about city producer family is, you know, everyone's welcome. Come on in.
Exactly. It's a bunch of mixed nuts.
For sure. So tell me a little bit about your, you know, your filmmaking history and how you got involved with the 48 Hour Film Project.
Well, I backed into the film industry. I was actually, this is a true story. I was in prison for attempted murder. When I was a young kid, I got involved with something. My brother was in a car accident, like a fender bender that turned violent. And a guy that was on my street had a gun in his car. And I was so, I don't know, it was such a traumatic thing that I just grabbed his gun and started shooting. And I had to do prison time in a federal prison.
Whoa.
And while I was awaiting my trial, facing 45 to life, while I was there, you do what they call programming. So you could take classes and things like that. Mm-hmm. I took a creative writing course. One of the professors there, she was working at the prison, but she was a Georgetown University professor. And she mentioned she had some friends who were doing a mini series for HBO called The Corners. And they wanted to talk with some people who had been involved in violence, drugs, and gangs and things like mm-hmm. that. And she liked me because for my age, I guess I was a little intelligent, I guess. So I wasn't really a thug. So they brought the guy down and we talked and we got to talking 3 or 4 times a week. And he loved my story. And he said, you know what? I'm going to help you out. And he hired a team of attorneys to go through my pretrial process with me. And by the time I came up for trial, they had worked some kind of a deal because they put me through all this academic testing and they put me through psychological testing. By the time I came up for trial, when facing 45 to life, my judge gave me 3 years probation with the stipulation that I complete college in that 3 years. Huh. Well, so I did. I went to a community college, which is a 2-year college. It was kind of a way to cheat it. So I'm like, they didn't say university, so I'm going to go to college. So I did that. And while I was doing that, I worked on the corners as a as an intern, getting donuts and stuff like that. They got picked up by HBO and became a television series. They changed the name of the series to The Wire. And I got to work on that series for the first 3-4 seasons until my mentor, the one who had been talking with me, his name was Bob Colesbury. He passed away. But what he did before he passed away is he paid for me to go to college. I went to Eastern Kentucky University. He paid for my school and my graduate school. His wife did once I finished. So it was left in a trust. And being on set at The Wire, it sparked my interest in film. When I graduated, I ended up with degrees in education, psychology, several degrees, because I stayed in college for almost 10 years because I didn't want to go back out into the real world. You know, college is this little microcosm.
Yeah.
So I stayed there forever. So I kept picking up degrees because the longer you stay, the more degrees they give you. So after that, I taught for a couple of years, but my first 48, this is my first 48, like the television show, it was just after I graduated college. And I did, my first one was a DC 48. A team needed someone to help out. And I'm like, I'm all for it. Let's do that. So I did that one. And once you do it the one time, you got the bug. Okay, it's you can't not do them again. The no sleep and all that, the weirdness about it is like, oh, I got to do this.
Yeah.
So everywhere I moved where I got a job in North Carolina, I did one. In South Carolina, I did one. And I was working in teaching, but working on the set of Screen Gems in Wilmington, North Carolina. And they announced that they were opening up a studio in Atlanta. And was like, who wants to move and that kind of thing. So I'm like, I'll go to Atlanta. Let's see what that's about.
It's a cool city.
We don't have the beach like Wilmington, but it's a better city. Yes, there's a lot more happening. Things don't close at 7 o'clock at night. So being here, what I do in the industry now is I do coverage for scripts. I do that freelance. I did some of that at Screen Gems, but ended up doing that for myself now. And if those who don't know what coverage is, someone who has a script or an idea that they want to shoot to a studio or whatever, they send it to someone like me. I break it down. Is it a 3-act? Is it a 5-act? I write a synopsis for it. I help them with the budgeting part of it, but I break it down and just basically say, this is what it's about. And I punch holes in it. You know, this is where, you know, you got some plot weaknesses here and character underdevelopment here. And I point all that out to them and I give them a report. And from that report, from the strength or weakness of that report, they can take it back and rewrite the script or say, okay, we're ready to pitch this to try and get funding for it. So, I've been doing that, going on 16 years now.
Wow.
But yeah, it's cool. It's weird when people ask about jobs in the industry. I tell some of the young writers and writers boot camps and things, most of the writers that you're going to meet, if you want to be a writer in the industry, they aren't the guys whose names are on films. That's a 1% game.
Yeah.
And here you got to be a scrapper to make money as a writer in this industry. You got to write commercials. You got to write jingles. I don't care. You got to write for everybody. to try and make it. But I've been able, you know, I sent my kids to college, bought my house, married a woman who's way outside my league, you know, so
you and me
I'm
both.
Doing okay. But yeah, but being in Atlanta, I did 13 straight, well, not 13 in Atlanta, 10 straight 48s here in Atlanta.
Wow.
How I approach the 48, because everyone does it differently, I approach because I'm a teacher first. So I say what I'm going to do is bring people who have it directed and I'm going to teach them how to direct a film. People who haven't written in this short and I'm going to teach them how to do that. So I step back and I bring in newbies. Every year I had a new team that I would bring in and mentor them to help them learn how to work in the industry. And from my team, it sparked at least 4 or 5 other teams. And
wow.
One team that just won the Savannah one, they were my mentees some years ago. And now they're city winners, which is like, I'm more like a proud dad, man. So yeah.
Yeah. And you know, now that you're a city producer, you'll kind of see that same thing, you know, in a slightly different light. So this will be my 18th year running it in Seattle. And one of the things that, you know, makes me the happiest, but also, you know, the saddest simultaneously is when I'm sending out emails to previous team leaders and someone that I was really excited about doing it again is like, I can't, I'm too busy. I got too much work. You know, it's the greatest thing to see,
yeah.
Especially when they started as like a hobbyist, you know, and they've grown over the course of it, 48 and outside the 48 to become professionals. You know, work in the industry.
And they start off making awful films. And, yeah. and this is something I tell my people here. Make bad films. Make bad films until they get better. You'll get better at this, but keep making bad films. Mm-hmm. Because eventually you're going to realize there's a flow, there's a formula to this whole thing. You doing this 18 years now. This is my second year in mm-hmm. Atlanta. For you to do it 18 years, there's a lot of crazy happening there. Because this, I had no idea what city producers went through, but oh my goodness. Like, so there's got to be a lot of love, but a lot of crazy to do it.
Yeah, it's, you know, we had, you know, 2020 was all virtual. You know, we didn't have any in-person screenings. And that was, you know, we're happy that we were able to pull anything off in 2020, Chris and I. And so I live in a little town just outside of SeaTac Airport called Burien. So it's like, you know, right next to Seattle. And my city has been trying to, you know, build a film office for a while. Like, you know, we have one of the producers from the Bill Nye the Science Guy show who lives here. So Scott was heavily involved. And when I needed a screening venue that was outdoors, City of Burien totally came through. And, you know, we had 3 outdoor screenings over the summer. And then my normal partner theater, owned by the Seattle International Film Festival, they didn't have a regular theater open for horror, but we had the opportunity to use kind of their flagship theater, The Egyptian. And we got to have both of our horror screening nights in a theater. And it was, you know, just mind blowing. I almost started crying when I saw the audience. You know, when I walked on stage for the first time, I was like, can you believe we're all together in a SIFF theater? You know, this is amazing.
It's crazy. I was blessed in when I started the 48 in Atlanta, there was Paul Rodriguez and Gabe Wardell. And they were amazing producers, the best salt of the earth people you could ever want to know. So I was able to experience it, and I volunteered where I could. Mm-hmm. I volunteered at Filmapalooza when it was here in Atlanta. So that was my first and only so far, but I'm looking forward to this year because it's in my home city. But and then they passed it on to Deontay Trundle, who I was really good friends with. So I got to see what he experienced as a city producer. And they got like huge footprints in that, like they were having 90 teams enter or 98 teams. And, you know, it was the, like at that point, it was the, can we get it over 100 mark? So when mm-hmm. I came in, I had all these ideas. I'm going to do this. I'm do that. And we're going over 100 next year. COVID.
Yeah. That's, I mean, so 2018 was the first year that Chris Flink became my co-producer. And I'd done all the years up to then, you know, functionally by myself. You know, there are friends and colleagues that helped out in various roles, but I never really had a partner in it. And my best year was in, you know, 2015. We had, you know, 86 teams, which, you know, for a metropolitan area of Seattle size is, you know, it's punching above our weight class. And I, you know, Chris came through at a time when I really, you know, needed some help. And I'm like, do you want to be my partner in this? Not just someone who helps out, but, you know, be my partner. Because I want to get us into triple digits here. I gotta beat San Diego. I gotta routinely get above San Diego, and you know, I have a friendly rivalry with, you know, Chris and Steve in Toronto. And so for a couple of years, they were beating Seattle, and then I started beating them, and then they had a year where that suddenly, boom, 135 teams. Like, what did you guys do? What, I mean, you guys were in the 70s, 80s, and now you have like 50 extra teams. What did you do? I can't wait for you to have a normal year.
I'm looking forward to that. I mean, but I really believe what we're in now is the new normal. I don't know what the future will hold, but I see the world figuring it out. Like, okay, some people are back, some people are not. They're doing their thing. Some theaters are taking it, some people not. But, you know, it's like I really, because I'm a history buff, I look at what we're going through now is like something that happens almost every 100 years. Go back to the Great Depression.
Mm-hmm.
They had, where the world changed and we had to work out a new normal. I believe we're figuring out a new normal because mm-hmm. I don't know if COVID is ever going to go anywhere. I think we're going to develop some natural immunities. We're going to develop some different types of medicines, and then we're going to learn to deal with it. And we're going to move on because people are resilient. The world is resilient. But what I like is I'm able to host in-person events like last year.
Mm-hmm.
I was able to do an in-person screening, which was my first in-person screening. And by the way, on night one, the theater, who we hired an editor to do the to make the block of films,
mm-hmm.
we didn't know that they couldn't render the films using Raptor, or their projector had a 100% rejection rate for that.
Oh.
That would have been good to know. Like, that would have been something we should have communicated. Like, you know, they just told us this is how it needs to be formatted and everything like that. But there was nothing on that paper that said, don't use Raptor. So I had to cancel my first night of screenings. And with a theater with 148 people in it, and then another 120 showed up. And I was literally, I'm not ashamed to admit, I was in tears.
Rightly so.
But my Atlanta people, it was so weird that they were like, you know, it's okay. It's all right. You're going to work it out. Some people were upset. Mm-hmm. But the ones who were upset, other people talked to them and said, well, mm-hmm. this isn't his fault. And they were so understanding. It was so warm. And it was such a family loving environment that when they came back 2 days later, and we had a successful screening, they gave a standing ovation and everyone was a hug and everything. And it was great. But Mark and Christina came to my rescue. They rented the theater for an extra night. Mark talked, you know, he's like, Dino, this isn't your fault. The family circled their wagons mm-hmm. around me. And that's why as long as Mark and Christina will have me, I'm never leaving. I'll be 85 doing this if they'll have me.
All right. I'm looking forward to being old man city producer with you.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's really amazing. The, you know, the sense of camaraderie and, you know, family that develops out of it. One of my best friends, I met through the 48. He was a competitor for several years. And, you know, in 2013, you know, I went to his wedding and, you know, we've done the 4 points together a couple of times because, you know, we have very similar senses of humor. And, you know, he's hired me at his Amazon job. And I mean, just, you know, the professional connections, the personal connections. Like today, we were lobbying to increase our state's film incentive, you know, which is never going to rival yours. We realize that. But I mean, we have a cap of $3.5 million, which is, that's nothing. You know, we got Oregon to the south with 20 or 22 million. We got Montana to the east with 12, and theirs is only 3 years old. So we're hoping to go from 3.5 to 20. And we had a day of lobbying our state legislators today. And I had 6 meetings. I was a meeting lead. And yeah, just kept, you know, every meeting I pop into, about half of them, there was, you know, a 48 participant, you know, in the meeting.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, oh, you're here.
And it's wonderful. The gentleman I made films with here when I began in Atlanta, David Forgot, and we worked several years here. I, you know, once I became a city producer, the second year, I'm looking at like Minnesota or Milwaukee, but I'm like, is a city producer, David Forgot. I'm like, whoa, David, what are you doing here? And so it's we are looking forward to reuniting in DC because we worked together so many years. I learned so much from him on the production side. You know, being a writer is far from being a director or producer. So I learned so much from him. So yeah, it's, you're right. The family, since I've been here, everyone is, you know, Jeff Hahn from Little Rock.
Good dude.
Becoming one of my really, really good friends. He's always there to help me out with things I don't know. Like, he does graphics really well, which I don't do. And he's like, hey, if you want something, I'll make it up for you, you know? And so, you know, he's always been a really, really big help. And but yeah, the family of this is what I cherish the most.
Yeah. I mean, like I talked to Olivier, you know, yesterday, you know, he's like, you know, my brother from a French mother. You know, I adore that man. I met him in 2013 at Filmapalooza. I also met Chris and, you know, Steve from Toronto on that trip. And, you know, Indra, you know, my tattoo sister, you know, I mean, that's what Filmapalooza is to me. I mean, I know you're at the one in Atlanta. Have you been to any others?
I have not. I have not. Washington, D.C. will be my next one, where I was born and raised. So I'm looking forward to going home. And, you know, I have two daughters there who are police officers in D.C. So it's going to be fun to spend time with them. But, you know, to be back in the city is going to be great.
Yeah. I mean, and you're going to, you know, see it from a different, you know, a different perspective. You know, your film isn't there. And you know, you'll be hanging with the, you know, the city producer crowd, which is, you know, you're going to meet even more of us. And you know, there's so many, you know, incredible people, like, you know, Robin and Dwayne from San Diego and Rob from Baltimore, and
we're going to rush off and get a 48 tattoo.
Oh yeah. Indra's in. I'm not sure if Chris is going to be there. He's trying to figure that out. But Indra wants to get a tattoo. She's not too keen on anything 48 related this year. I'm keen to add on to mine.
I just got to get my 48. I mean, I've done it so many times. It's a part of me now. It's in my blood. So
yeah. I mean, it was so, you know, the little microphone light and camera icons?
Yeah.
I'm thinking of surrounding my 48 tattoo with those.
Oh, that'd be nice.
Yeah.
That would be nice. I like the thought of that. I may steal that.
Hey, yeah. You'll just be, you know, one tattoo behind me. You got to get the logo first and then, you know, add on.
There you go.
I'm so looking forward to film, you know, an in-person Filmapalooza. Because, you know, so many people busted so much ass last year to make, you know, the virtual one happen. And I mean, Indra and Chris in particular, I mean, they really, really, really put everything they had into it. And, you know, especially after, you know, Filma in Rotterdam just 2 weeks before the world shut down, it was, you know, it's a letdown, naturally, just a letdown, because, you know, we all want to see each other. Like, we're family. It's just way too much fun. It's my favorite time of the year.
The virtual one, though, I wish we would, and I don't know if we are, but I wish we would keep some elements for that. Because honestly, if we look at the metaverse and things like that, that's kind of where the world is headed, I think. And it for me, the virtual one, it felt big and important. It was very, like, I learned so much. I went to all of the seminars.
Like, oh, I'm, you like, had to they, watch me and, talk a couple of times, didn't yeah, you?
Exactly. But the way we do it online, I had time to do it. I didn't have to rush from venue to venue to catch one. So I like that part of it. So I hope that we keep some of those elements, because, you know, it would be kind of cool. It'd be kind of cool to do it in like a metaverse environment as well.
It's interesting, because I think the pandemic has forced, you know, a level of creativity on us as an organization, like our required elements do for our participants, like Cinema 48, you know, that has you know, evolved so much over the last 2 years, you know, because of the pandemic, because, you know, we needed the virtual turn in, you know, and the virtual kickoff. And I can't see myself running a 48 now without using that in some fashion. You know, and Wouter has really stepped up and developed this amazing tool.
Oh man, he's a genius. He's a mad scientist. And here's the thing. I'm spoiled. I have to say I'm spoiled because unlike Paul and Gabe before me and Deontay, I don't have boxes of paperwork. That's that stuff goes to Cinema 48 and I can just, I check things off. And, you know, so I'm in a world like, I'm like old parents say, you'll never know what it was like during our days. You, you know, you young kids.
Yeah, I can, that's I how can, it is. I can be that guy.
Exactly.
I remember, you know, my first years when people were still doing DVDs and mini DV tapes. And so, you know, I'd have to, you know, copy times. I do all my own editing. I'm an editor. So, you know, I'd have to, you know, everything's in real time when you're going from tape, and I'd have, you know, 42 teams and I'd have to ship this gigantic box back. Yeah. And, you know, just in the last, you know, 6 years, you know, everything's HD to 4K and on a thumb drive and my boxes are getting smaller and smaller and now they don't exist. It's amazing.
Welcome to the new world.
Yeah, it's incredible. You know, I think, you know, Filmapalooza is going to evolve as part of this. I just think, you know, COVID really, you know, was a wake-up call for city producers and for, you know, the larger organization that, you know, the way we had been doing things, even if we get back to something approaching our previous normal, that there are elements forced on us because of COVID that are, you know, viable and useful going forward. I think Mark and Christina and Brian and are really coming around to, you know, some new ideas out of necessity. And, you know, luckily Wouter's there to go, yeah, I can do that.
I was thinking about COVID in relation to the world. And I think it had to happen. I think that was the universe's way of telling us it's time to evolve, because COVID taught people that you don't have to drive to a brick and mortar every day to have a job and to be productive.
Mm-hmm.
Sit in your home with a suit jacket on, a shirt and tie and your underwear, and you could do work.
Yeah.
And be productive and prosper in this environment. So it's forced us, like you said, it forced us to make changes that maybe needed to be changed, that if we were a little comfortable in how we did things, it wouldn't have been changed maybe for another 5 to 7 years.
Yeah.
But it forced us into it. It forced us to evolve. So now we're better people for it. We're better filmmakers. We're better creatives. The operation moves just a little more sleek. Just like I see a lot of Chick-fil-A restaurants when I go out shopping and eating and everything. And they're not even, in my area, at least in the Atlanta area, they're not opening their inside dining areas at all. They're just not, even when things like die down some, they turn the dining area into a storage place. But the lines in the fast food, it's like four lines deep. And it moves so quickly. So they evolved into a model that might be better for the future going forward. And if we start using electric cars now, so we can get the emissions down and everything. But I think we're becoming something more. And if we look at it that way and bring out the better of us and allow it to mold us into something better, we're all going to benefit from this experience.
Yeah. I mean, when I think about, you know, so I mean, we've binge watched, you know, everything, you know, we possibly can. But my wife and I, we, you know, love the Great British Baking Show. And, you know, pre-COVID, you know, a year before COVID, I started taking up baking pretty seriously, getting into breads. And, you know, once the lockdowns happened, you know, we didn't buy a single loaf of bread for like 9 months. I was just making it all the time. Now I'm making steamed puddings and cheesecakes and custards and,
uh-oh, you know, you're trying to get on a show so you get
no. I don't have the temperament for those shows.
Here's the handshake, buddy. That Paul Hollywood handshake.
Oh, hey, yeah. Yeah, that would be a memorable moment. But, you know, my wife, you know, she's the daughter of two Polish engineers, you know, and all three of them are, you know, immigrants. So she's got, you know, that work ethic and got to build stuff. She has transformed our, you know, just to keep sane, she's transformed our house into, you know, this model of efficiency. You know, we now have two, you know, electric generators. We have three solar panels on the roof and a wind turbine. And, you know, we charge all of our devices off of the, you know, the battery that's powered by those. She built a pizza oven.
Nice. You can go off the grid in a couple of years.
We always joke it, you know,
off the grid.
Yeah. You know, when the apocalypse comes, you know, we're inviting everyone to our compound, which we call Foxglove Hollow.
Nice.
Foxglove grows like crazy here. So Foxglove Hollow. We even have our own saloon, which we call the Two Dog Saloon.
Wow, you are doing it, man.
Yeah, we got bees, you know, brewing our own beer and mead.
Oh, God, bees. Don't mention. You know, Georgia's like the home of bumblebees. If you ever look at the honey at your local grocery store,
yeah,
it's from Georgia. We got like pollen counts that are astronomical. It's crazy here. But
no, we got to save the bees.
Yeah, but I love it. I'll never leave the 48. I don't think I'll ever leave Georgia now. DC will always be home, but you know, I found my wife here, I raised my kids here, and this is it's where it's at for me for at least now. I'll probably, when I retire, I'll probably move to Savannah. It's a sleepier town and it's got you know, trees that hang over the roads and it's on the beach, and I'll grow old right there, but I'll still be doing the 48.
Yeah, it's, oh man. Yeah, I can't see myself not doing it. I mean, I just can't imagine a reality where I'm not doing it. It's, you know, it's that important to me. You know, it's, yeah, I simply can't imagine it. And, you know, I stayed, you know, I was tempted to move down to LA or back to the Bay Area, you know, 2008 to 2010. And then I met my wife and I'm like, no, I'm staying here. You know, she's not moving to LA. She, you know, she's got a good job, you know, working for the state, and I have too many friends here. The 48's nice and established, and, you know, I can make a living here, you know, doing editing, and I'm getting more into writing like I should. So I know a script doctor to come to when I got my draft.
There you go. I'll tell anyone who sees this, though, city producers, contestants, participants, if you have been involved in a 48, if you've done a 48, if you haven't had a conversation with like Brian, Mark, Christina, Walter, you need to make it happen. Because like my first film when I met Mark, and I was at that time I had just done the 48s and I was volunteering here in Atlanta,
which is a very good film of Palooza, I gotta say.
It was a good one.
When you
talk to Mark, as busy as he has to be,
yeah,
he looks into your soul and makes you feel important. Like he wants to hear what you have to say. Mm-hmm. And he asks those digging questions that are bigger than, you know, how you doing today. Like if he says how you doing, he wants to know how are you doing. Like give me more than fine. And it's to meet some people who are genuinely that good.
Mm-hmm.
It's a rare thing, especially in this industry. You know, we love to say I love you. We say that in the Hollywood industry all the time, but we don't really mean it. But they generally make they genuinely make you feel like you're valued and you're cherished in whatever capacities that you're feeling that time for the 48. So if for no other reason, that's why I want to help them live out this dream of making this happen. And I like being a part of this for that.
I got to say thank you so much. You know, I can't wait to see you in person. You know, the Zoom conversations, they've kind of, you know, fallen off a little bit. We got to get back on the wagon for that. But I feel like you and I know each other better than we actually do, you know, because of this. And, you know, I can't wait to, you know, hang out in person, you know, and spend some real, you know, quality time with you at Filmapalooza as a city producer.
Yeah. And the films, gosh, the films that are into this year are so good.
Oh, yeah. I can't wait for people to see it.
Oh, they're so good.
The Shanghai film. Did you see that one?
I did. I'm watching all of them. Like, you know, just I'll help out wherever I can as long as I get to see these films. And yeah, congratulations to anybody who's done the film and they representing their city. Be proud, because your cities have turned out some amazing films. And I can't wait for them to sit in the theater and see them with people from around the world and appreciating their work, because they deserve all the laurels and all the praise that they can get for what they've done, especially under these conditions.
Yeah. And I mean, just the connections they're going to make. I mean, I always like to joke that, you know, if I need a couch to crash on in Durban, South Africa, I got one. I know who to call. If I need a bed to crash in Buenos Aires, all over South America, all over, you know, Europe and Asia and, you know, Africa.
And Atlanta.
And I mean, Atlanta.
Chad came here and we sat down, we had dinner and I helped him find some people to work on a project that he was working on. So, you know, it's a family and it's the gift that keeps on giving.
Yeah, definitely. Well, thank you so much. I really appreciate your time and getting into that origin story.
Oh, yeah. It's
a long one. Thank you very much. And I will see you in about a month and a half in D.C.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me. And thank you for listening to my little story.